self-assessment. Oops. A few different types of assessments, and the results of these are often challenged by our students, as they probably should be, because we know that our styles are dynamic, just like we are as people, and that how we respond in situations is nuanced and contextual. But the purpose of doing those assessments is that students can kind of help see and help them understand themselves, but also how they can work with others who might have wildly different leadership and management styles, especially when it comes to influencing or negotiating or conflict management. And then in the course, we also have several in-class practice activities and cases that allow students to practice how to perform a stakeholder analysis to understand how power and influence may impact decision-making and how to use negotiation and conflict management skills in those situations. And then again, before assessing them on skill or competency, we have them write a short leadership reflection paper in which they have to provide a narrative on setting their leadership purpose and vision. We ask them to explain the type of public health changes that they want to see and how they see themselves leading in that space. And then we also ask them to think about what success as a leader would look like for them and to give 10 as a leader I will statements. So again, the purpose of that is for them to really think about the values that they want to bring into leadership spaces. And then lastly, in the paper, they have to connect what they have learned or read about in class and how that has helped them shape see themselves or thinking about themselves as leaders. And I don't have this in a slide, and I was just thinking about this before this webinar, is that to me, this is the piece that is the most rewarding of having taught this material for a few years now, and having that first class where I have students that say, I don't see myself as a leader, I don't lead. And then they write this paper, and you can see them develop these things over time, and they're actually giving examples of how they have led or how they want to lead in the future. I think is really rewarding whenever we have students who can't see themselves as leaders. And then once they get exposure to some of these things, they are able to articulate, you know, why this matters to them. Okay, so I've talked about some of that leadership development, but I want to talk about how we assess the CEPH competencies. And as you are likely aware, if you're familiar with the criteria, there are two foundational leadership competencies that have evolved a little bit in their time since inception in the 2016 criteria. And those are apply leadership and or management principles to address a relevant issue, and to apply negotiation and mediation skills to address organizational or community challenges. So in our public health seminar course, oh, next slide, I'm sorry. I was jumping ahead. Thanks, Molly. So in public health seminar, their culminating end of the semester assessment is to perform a leadership case analysis. And the purpose of this paper is for students to demonstrate critical thinking around leadership, vision, negotiation, and communication skills to solve an adaptive public health challenge. So in this case, students take on the role of being the assistant director for the Division of Behavioral Health in a city health department. The case is adapted from Acosta Price and colleagues in a case that was published in Essential Case Studies in Public Health that detailed the implementation of a health department-led mental and behavioral health program for Latinx youth. And so acting as the assistant director, students are asked basically to kind of lead from the middle to try to get funding to support the implementation of this mental and behavioral health program. Our adapted case narrative involves an outgoing director of the Department of Health who will be giving ultimate approval for budget resources, multiple other assistant directors at the health department with competing program priorities, and a number of other internal and external stakeholders, along with information that helps guide students to think about the professional or political information that conveys why or why not. These stakeholders might be in support of implementation of such a program. For instance, the assistant director for communicable disease in the health department has been advocating for an increase in resources for flu vaccination programs. And part of this assessment is seeing how students work with different stakeholders and how they can do some collaboration or negotiation for their programs. Next slide, please. So the components of the paper, the students have to create a vision for change. They must clearly articulate the change that they are trying to lead. They have to perform a stakeholder analysis. So they have to justify or provide a rationale for their stakeholder engagement. So who is likely for and who is likely against funding this program, and how important are those stakeholders for gaining financial approval for implementation? Then they have to write about their strategy for gaining approval. So they have to talk specifically about the collaboration or negotiation skills that they would use, and who they're collaborating with, and how, what types of efforts or negotiation skills would they implement, and who do they approach first and why. And then lastly, they have to develop a message framework where they give communication talking points or messages that they would use to influence or try to influence different stakeholders about the importance of the program and how they could implement it. And we assess the paper for comprehensiveness of the justification for their stakeholders, that they have a substantive leadership strategy that includes a sequencing of their approach, that they have a clear vision for change, and that their message framework and talking points are all concise and relevant. Next slide, please. Okay, so some strengths of this. And I think this, you know, comes back to some of the competencies that Ross talked about earlier with leadership and communication, collaborative leadership, and political leadership when they're thinking through their strategy here. But it really does give them a real world example where leadership skill is needed to influence change within their organization and in their community. Their vision for change and their stakeholder analysis have usually been pretty strong, and they have had a pretty good understanding of that. I think what I've seen over time is that their collaboration and negotiation skills have improved over time with what they are writing. And I think that might be a reflection of how we are teaching it and making adaptations to how we teach it. Some struggles that students have typically had when doing this strategy is their collaboration and negotiation and the sequencing of their strategy, right? So they kind of forget every once in a while about their internal stakeholders and their internal, you know, their colleagues, their other assistant directors of different departments. And they'll say something like they're going to go straight to the mayor and ask for additional funding for the program. And, you know, it's getting them to kind of think through that, those kind of relationships, and that, you know, if you're an assistant director in the health department, it might not be the best political strategy to go straight to the mayor to ask for additional funding without working first with your internal colleagues and the director of your health department. Okay, next slide. Okay, so and with that, that kind of wraps up the formal assessments that we do in class. And I'm going to hand it over to Ragini to talk more about how we ask students and our alumni about their perceptions of leadership competency as well.
Thank you so much, Angela. And I will just put in a little plug that I also teach this class, and I'm actually actively teaching it this semester. So I appreciate Angela reminding me that I need to tell students in a couple of weeks about this leadership assessment, but I'm going to spend a few minutes just showing all of you some of the outcome data we were able to collect as it relates to our assessment of the foundational leadership competencies for our MPH students while they're in the program, and then also our alumni. So when we implemented the new CEPH competencies, we started a student self-competency self-assessment process. And this includes that we ask students to complete a self-assessment of the CEPH foundation competencies in their first semester in the program, and then their final semester prior to graduation. The two foundational 2016, and I should date this a little, CEPH leadership competencies that we include in the assessment are applying principles of leadership, governance, and management, which include creating a vision, empowering others, fostering collaboration, and guiding decision-making, and also applying negotiation and mediation skills to address organizational or community challenges. We asked our students to rate their competency on a 5-point scale, which ranges from stating that they feel not at all competent to highly competent. And then we started this process, we have a total of 174 students that have completed what we call a pre and post-assessment data analysis, or data for us to analyze. Our definition of pre-assessment here is that the data that we collected in that first semester of the program, and then post-assessment is the data that we collected in the last semester of our program. As you can imagine, we do face challenges when it comes to data collection, and that includes our students completing the self-assessment in the early years of implementing the self-assessment. And then the second piece is that students enter their own unique ID. So we provide a nomenclature for the unique ID that students then enter into a text field. And as you can imagine, with text fields, there are errors that happen. But over the years, we've combated the challenge of students not completing the self-assessment. And this is through us providing the self-assessment as an assignment in a course in their first semester of the program and then the final semester. And these are courses that all of our students are required to take as a part of our curriculum. And then lastly, we want to acknowledge that that first leadership competency that I have on this slide, we do recognize that it's been updated in accreditation changes from CEPH in 2021. So we are in the process of updating that in our self-assessment as well. Next slide, please. When looking at the first leadership competency related to applying principles of leadership, governance, and management, on the left-hand side graph, we can see that at pre-assessment, and again, these are students that are taking that self-assessment survey in the first semester of their program, 17.2% of our students felt competent or highly competent in this area, which is that green piece of the pie chart. And then when we look at the right-hand side at our post-assessment, we have 77.59% of our students feeling competent or highly competent in applying principles of leadership, governance, and management. And the difference between that pre-post data was statistically significant. Next slide, please. When looking at that second leadership competency, which was looking at applying negotiation, mediation skills, we see that at pre-assessment, our students felt at about 15.52% of our students felt competent or highly competent in this area. And then when we look at post-assessment on the right-hand side, we see this shift that our students felt that at 64.94% felt competent or highly competent in applying negotiation and mediation skills to address organizational and community challenges. And this was also statistically significant. We are currently exploring ways to dive deeper into how our curriculum may be the reason for this shift. That includes qualitative methodology. So maybe providing some surveys to our students to understand why is this happening from their first semester to their last semester. But some anecdotal comments from our students include that they learned this leadership content in their first year, as Angela mentioned. So it's in the first year of our program. And then they have their applied practice learning experience that they take during the summer. They then go into extracurricular activities, and then they go into more advanced coursework. So they have this opportunity where they can apply these principles and concepts throughout the progress in the program. Going forward, we also have an opportunity to review our internal data against our aggregate student results for the certified public health exam. We do know that we won't be able to map our internal data to the CPH exam, but it does give us another way of assessing our students' preparedness for leadership. Next slide, please. The next data source that we use to assess the CEPH and our own internal program competencies is through our program-administered alumni survey. We conduct this survey every 5 years, and our recent data collection included those who graduated from 2016 to 2021. We ask our alumni demographic questions, information on their current place of employment, and finally for them to reflect on how prepared they feel, or felt, I should say, after leaving the Brown School with each foundational competency. For the alumni survey, we combine those two foundational leadership competencies into one statement. And so we ask our students, after graduating from the Brown School with an MPH degree, I was prepared to apply leadership and management skills, including negotiation in an organization or community. Alumni then can select from choices that range from completely agree to completely disagree, and then leaving an option for not sure. And in total, we've received 162 complete responses from June 2022 to August 2022. Next slide, please. When looking at our overall results, we see that a majority of our alumni felt prepared by our MPH program in the leadership competencies, with 69.14% reporting that they completely agreed or agreed with our statement. As a note previously, we implemented started this process in 2018. So this graph includes those that were assessed on older competencies, as you can imagine, during their time in the program, and then those on the updated competencies. Next slide, please. Because of the mix, we wanted to conduct a sub-analysis just to see how does this compare to alumni who completed their program prior to and after the CEPH competency changes. So we grouped our alumni into a pre-CEPH competency change group, which was defined as graduating from 2016 to 2018, and those post-CEPH competency change who graduated from 2019 to 2021. We saw a slight shift in those who agreed and completely agreed in their preparedness for leadership, going from 62.5% in the pre-change group to 77% in the post-change group. But what I want to highlight here is that we saw a smaller proportion reporting that they felt not sure in the post-change group. And although neither of these changes were statistically significant, I feel that as we continue to collect data on our alumni, we might see a greater shift in how prepared our students feel for leadership. We do continue to look forward to review our self-assessment data as we examine changes to our curriculum and how we deliver this leadership content. And so with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Angela.
Great. Thank you so much, Ragini. So just a few lessons learned and some future thinking from all of this. We know that leadership skill development is imperative for all public health students. And as Ross and his colleagues' research suggests, is even more important as people get into practice and thinking about the implementation and de-implementation of programs. What we have seen, and what as many of you have probably seen in your programs as well, is that students often have barriers, both real and perceived, to viewing themselves as leaders. And that we think that intentional leadership development and the CEPH competencies and curriculum can increase student perceptions of skill. However, we think that leadership self-reflection is key to that development and likely necessary really before being able to assess competence. So putting some intentional thought into having students do some self-reflection and assessment before they practice skill. Another thing that we've kind of learned through this is that we largely focus on implementation in our curriculum, and I think we have some room for some critical exploration on how we get students to practice leadership for de-implementation too, to get practice in leading change through de-implementing ineffective programs. And then lastly, I think some unknowns, or what are some of the barriers to alumni perceptions of skill? We don't get into that granular of detail in our alumni survey, but we are interested in knowing what are opportunities for leadership self-reflection, development, and skill building over time that can help public health practitioners feel more competent in those skills. So with that, I want to say thank you so much. That's what we have for today. And I know there's quite a few questions. And I think, Molly, you're going to lead us through that.
Yeah, absolutely. So as folks probably noticed, both Ross and I have been typing some answers into some of the question box. So we may get back to some of those if we have a little bit of time. But let's go to the questions that we haven't attempted to address via typing. So this first question is relates to the competencies. So in an early slide, we saw a competency model. And the comment, well, I'll just read it. The problem I have with these competencies all along is they are more professional development versus academic competencies, coming from the perspective of somebody who teaches a similar class. And assessing these competencies can be very frustrating because it's a snapshot in time. So do any of you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's a really good point. Maybe I'll give one quick thought and then Angela and Rogan. I think part of it is we need to better align what we teach in the classroom with what professionals need when they're out in the workforce, because my experience doing both is they're often, we learn later what people we wish we would have taught them when they were in our MPH curriculum, for example. So I think part of it is, I think it's a really good point. I think part of it is we need to do a better job of aligning those on-the-job professional development programs with the things we do in more formal, you know, graduate education or undergraduate education in public health. But that was only my initial thought. I didn't have anything else too deep on that one. Angela, Ragini, what thoughts do you have?
I think the only thing I would add is that when we are assessing the competencies, we have to remind ourselves that these are foundational and that this is sometimes students' first exposure to leadership and leadership competencies. And the leadership framework really is more about professional development, and people will get to that and get to those, you know, deeper level things in leadership. And that what we really are aiming is to introduce them to these skills and to these guiding principles so they can get to that deeper level later. And Molly, I don't know if that kind of resonates with the intention behind the foundational competencies, but you know, I think that we have to keep that in mind, that students typically across schools and programs don't have a lot of experience in leadership and management skills, and that we're really just, you know, getting to the basics at first.
I think that's right. And I think one thing that I noticed, and you all can correct me as the experts, but the competency model that was in one of Ross's earlier slides was a professional development competency model. That is not a competency model developed for educational programs, if I'm correct.
Right.
Okay, wonder if you could talk, and you did talk about some of your tools, but assessment tools that you use to develop, to assess leadership and also students' adaptive capacity and resilience to set self-development goals.
Yeah, so I saw a couple of questions asking if we could share the assessments, and I'm happy to do that. I don't know what might be the best way to do that. I don't know if those can go out with the slides and recording, Molly. I'm happy to share what we have. And then when the other part of the question was students' goal setting.
Self-resiliency and goal setting.
Gosh, that's a great question. And I'm not sure that I have a really great answer for that other than what, you know, I've just seen in the classroom over the course of a semester at a time with students in this course. And I think that, you know, I think the goal setting is sometimes, you know, like with all of us, sometimes we have to set those goals whenever we are in a position where we have to do it, such as in class, and there's academic credit that's going along with it. And, you know, we've got mixed reviews from students about the leadership material. I think some students really enjoy it and really connect with it. And I think there are still, you know, some students that even though others are progressing and showing, you know, the development and showing interest in thinking about themselves as leaders, there are still some that get to that reflection paper and say, I don't see myself in this space. And so that's hard. And I think, you know, we think sometimes about like, how do we you know, address the barriers that those students are having in you know, leadership development and goal setting. So I think it's a great question. I'm just not sure that I have a really great answer to it.
So this is a very technical question, but could you mention, is your MPH program in person or online?
It is in person. We have a couple of courses that we offer every semester online, but we are an in-person program.
And the next question, another thought-provoking one, but we'll try it. Can you speak about how one might integrate systems thinking into leadership courses? It's an area where this individual says they often have a hard time helping students feel confident and competent.
Ross, do you want to try that one first?
Yeah, I mean, so I think we look at this in two ways, and I think I probably know which way you're thinking. So there's systems thinking that everything in public health is connected in systems in one way or another, and the systems interrelate to each other. And we have to learn the skill to be able to work across those systems. And then there's a whole set of systems methods that are things like social network analysis and agent-based modeling and system dynamics modeling. And so depending, and so if you kind of get down in the level of it, understanding a system, you might be able to need to map the social network in that system. And so I think it is a combination of things. And there are a number of short courses now. We teach one at WashU in the summer that's just a week long. And they're sort of big. We have a new course in systems thinking that Doug Luke is teaching now. So that might be another follow-up that we could do, Angela, is share the text from that. And so I think that I agree totally. It is an area that is way underrepresented and underappreciated in terms of what the hands-on skills need to be.
Okay, the next question, and again, you talked about this a bit, but wonder if we could just go back a little bit. How do you assess growth in collaboration and negotiation skills?
Yeah, and I think that goes back to the slide I had where I said, you know, that they have improved over time. And I should say we haven't assessed that with individual students. I've seen just better collaboration and negotiation skills come across in their papers after teaching the course for a while. So I'm not sure that individuals have improved so much as maybe the teaching has improved to include that in the curriculum. And so students understand what those collaboration and negotiation skills are. And that is just really subjective in my own, what I've seen happen. So I don't have any data that says the students have actually improved in collaboration and negotiation. It's just how I've seen it play out over time in the course.
Yeah, and I just want to jump in here that I previously worked in our Office of Field Education. So I was overseeing our students that do their applied practice experience for the Master's of Public Health program. And I think what I see coming out of that experience once they took this course was that they felt more empowered to have those conversations. But to Angela's point, it's very anecdotal. So I'm hoping we can get some qualitative data around that too.
Next question. Do you think that some of these leadership assessments and competencies could be adapted for undergraduate students, perhaps fourth year undergraduate students?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, part of our program is we have a 3-2 program where students are essentially earning a baccalaureate and a master's degree in 5 years' time. And so, you know, essentially they are seniors when they're coming into this course. They've finished 3 years of undergraduate work, and then they start their first year in their MPH program in the year that they would be a senior in undergrad. And those students have been some of our most incredible students. And I think that they, you know, if I didn't know that they were a 3-2 student, I wouldn't know that they are any different than their colleagues and their peers that are in the classroom. And they do just as well with those assessments as their other students. So I think that you probably don't need to adapt them much or if at all. I think that student upper level undergraduate students could do well with these assessments as well.
And this is just a very specific question. Maybe it doesn't have a specific answer, but for Angela or Ragini, what texts do you use for the PHS2 class that you were referring to?
We don't. That's the fun fact. So we actually adapt our PHS2 course to our public health speaker series. And so depending on what speaker comes in, our instructor team then just researches more non-research focused material for our students to read or view. So that could be TED Talks, it could be news articles, anything that we provide for our students. And then for the leadership portion of this, there are vetted materials that we have. And Angela, I'll let you talk about that a little bit more, but from our Leadership at Brown class that we actually have our students read and they annotate those. They have to post discussion board comments about our speaker series that are tied to those leadership concepts. And so, yeah, we don't actually have a textbook.
Yeah, we do have a couple of standard readings though on so the case material might change, but the material for leadership and negotiation and management usually stays the same. And that is, there's a couple of articles on negotiation and mediation skills. There's an article on adaptive leadership for global health challenges. So, you know, not only thinking about our domestic challenges in public health, but how do you apply leadership globally? And so there's a couple of those that are standard that we'd also be happy to provide if anyone would like to take a look at those.
Mm-hmm. Great. So the next question has to do with your, alignment with the core competencies for public health professionals from the Council on Linkages Between Academia and Public Health Practice. You've used the CEPH competencies, obviously, because you must, but have you done any work or crosswalking with the Council on Linkages?
We have not. I think that that's probably a great thing for us to explore, but no, we've just focused on the CEPH and we haven't done that cross exploration.
We've got just a minute left, and there were two questions that are related and I know are of high interest, which relate to your alumni survey and how you got so many alumni to participate and reach out to them to complete the survey.
I'm really thrilled to hear that somebody thinks we had great response rate, because our response rate this round was a lot lower than our response rate from the previous one. So, you know, we sent out the survey to our alumni list and sent several reminders, and we did make it anonymous. So I don't know if, you know, that probably increases the likelihood of alumni wanting to fill it out. But yeah, it was just a standard email with the link to the survey, and then I think two or three email reminders, and we cut it off after that third reminder. So I'm glad to hear that folks think that was a great response.
Yeah, someone that looked at that data. Thank you so much for that comment.
Wonderful. All right, we really are up on our time. I want to make just a couple of announcements, and I apologize that we didn't get to all of the questions. First, there's a note in our Q&A box that there is a project underway out of the Association of Schools and Programs of Public Health, ASPBH, to work on a crosswalk with the Council on Linkages and other competency sets. So that is great to know. The other announcement I want to make is that I realized you probably heard midway through there was a problem with our recording. So those of you who are eagerly looking forward, you're going to get half of a recording available on the CEPH website on Monday, which is better than no recording. But the CEPH website will be updated on Monday with the slides and the half a recording. And I can't promise by Monday, but early next week, I'll connect with our presenters today to get those additional materials that they mentioned. And those will be associated at that same hyperlink on the CEPH website where the slides and recording will be. So those materials, Angela, that you offered to share from some of your assessments and other documents that folks were interested in. You also are welcome to contact our presenters today to ask any follow-up questions. I wish we could have gotten to all of those. One final announcement. We had a questioner ask about CPH credit. You did not need to give us your CPH registration number. You simply will note this attendance at this webinar on your CPH application for continuing credentialing. You don't need to have registered with us in advance. So I think that's all of the materials I wanted to cover. I'd like to really thank our presenters from WashU. This was an amazing presentation. I'd like to thank all of our attendees. And we appreciate your work and look forward to speaking with you soon. Thanks so much and take care.
Thanks, everyone.